What's up, everybody, and welcome to Mostly Film, your one-stop catering shop for all things in the world of cinema. I'm one of your hosts, Jonathan McQuire, joined by Bill Picard, Jay Payton.
Oh, hello.
I'm Spinner.
I wasn't expecting Spinner to show up, man.
I'm Spinner.
Gosh. That was towards the end, that was pretty spot on.
Yeah.
Normally your accents come in strong. And put her out towards the end.
That one got better as it went.
They got better as it came along. How you doing?
I'm good. What did they call his smoochy character?
Moochie.
Yeah. A moochie. Yeah.
My balls kind of itch.
My nuts itch. This soup made my nuts itch.
That's it.
Oh man, that's great.
Yep.
So we watched two Robin Williams films this week. One of them involves a guy named Spinner. The actor's name is Michael Rispoli, who plays Spinner Dunn, is a brain damaged boxer. He, of course, was in The Sopranos. But we watched Death to Smoochie, 2002 film, directed by Danny DeVito, also stars Danny DeVito, Robin Williams, Edward Norton, and Kathleen Keener, and a very strange, off-putting John Stewart. And we also watched Toys, a 1992 film directed by Barry Levinson, which stars Robin Williams, Michael Gambon, Joan Cusack, Robin Wright, and LL Cool J as your main leads, and a very young Jamie Foxx, who is barely a B-tier character in this film. So that was kind of weird, too.
The Jamie Foxx thing felt like an LL Cool J, like wink and nod, like, I'm here for you, brother.
Yeah. So which one do you want to start with?
I think we do Toys.
All right. This film was wild. First time watch for me. Was it a first time watch for you?
It was, yeah. I had no point of reference for this one. So,
yep. So this is a 1992 film. It was released at Christmas time, which hence the opening was great.
It was, the opening did send like messages of like, oh, this is going to be a Christmas movie. And
then it quickly tapers off that. Because I thought in my head, I was like, this is going to be a staple Christmas film for me now. And then I was like, 20 minutes later, I was like, nah.
I almost feel like this movie could have played better if it had possibly stayed in that vein of Christmas.
Agreed.
But, you know, I think some choices were made.
Could have pivoted to Christmas and still been the same film.
Could have cut out a lot of fat in this and kind of kept it kind of simple.
I think it would have given everybody a half star boost more.
Yeah.
Because Christmas films are expected to be more like this film. Yes. So if it would have had a Christmas tag on it.
Yeah.
I think critics and ratings would have given a little bit more of the Christmas pass.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I think I gave this film 4 stars. I think if this was a Christmas led film, I'd give it 4.5 stars. I think it would have given it a half star bump for me if somehow it was all tied into Christmas.
Yeah.
But
I can see that. But let's talk about the movie.
Yep. So, this film very polarizing film, apparently. People have a lot of takes on this film. I loved it. JP thought it was good.
It's
good. Just okay, good. 3 stars for you. What is your 3-star rating? 3 stars for me is like, hey, yo, this was a good film. Will I ever watch it again? Possibly.
It is a movie that has a great concept.
Mm-hmm.
It just, it either was not firing on all cylinders for me, or it just simply missed the mark. Like there was just choices made and just didn't stick the landing.
Yeah,
but I still appreciated it.
Yeah, that's your general 3-star synopsis. Okay. Yeah, so this film, just in a nutshell, and then we'll talk about it, stars Robin Williams and Joan Cusack as a son and daughter of a famous toy maker who has this like North Pole-ish kind of out in the middle of nowhere, super weird, eccentric, over the top toy factory. And that toy song is a banger in the factory. That slapped where they're all working.
It is okay. It's okay.
No, that was the best song of the film until they got crazy in there. But no, that song was great. Anyway, so it stars them and they're both too immature or not ready to take over the company. So when their father passes, in order to motivate his children to take over the company, to shepherd them there and got to get a rise out of them to be more mature and get ready for it.
Yeah.
He hands the company off to his brother, who is a 3-star general, I think.
He basically is one that felt shaded by the government, felt that the government gave up on him.
He was in Vietnam. He was a veteran in Vietnam. He was like, I think he was a 3-star general because their father, or their Robin Williams' grandfather, had 4 stars and yeah. they make that big, big comment there. But yeah, he was a 3-star general in Vietnam, and to the shock to everybody in the company, including Robin Williams and Joan Cusack's character, their dad hands off the company to his brother, who was mm-hmm. this Vietnam War general who knows nothing about toys, doesn't care about toys.
Yeah.
The black, kind of the...
I never got the feeling, though, that they cared this way or another. I think they otherwise trusted their father's decision. I never got that vibe that...
Well, I meant Owen, I guess. I'm thinking Owen.
Yes.
So his right-hand man, yes. who also, if you've been listening to us, he's also in Hook, plays one of the Lost Boys that came back home with Robin Williams yeah. from Neverland. He's very questioning of it, and he brings it up to Leslie early on in like a, this probably wasn't the best move, but Leslie's like, we'll give him a chance. We don't know. Because mm-hmm. they're like... You know, both of the kids are kind of aloof, hence why it's the dad on his yeah. deathbed is wanting to grow up. And hopefully this motivates him to grow up and pay more attention and stuff like that. But so this toy factory gets handed off to his brother, the war general. And mm-hmm. as he comes in, he's slow to make changes, doesn't understand it all, sits and observes how Robin Williams and Joan Cusack run the factory. Joan Cusack's character is in charge of all the fashion and all like, so for like all the Barbies, she insists on wearing them life-size clothes to see how they feel, how they look, how they act in them, to see how she feels and how girls will feel playing with dolls in those clothes. Robin Williams is in charge of strange novelty things like vomit and diarrhea and poop and all that kind of weird stuff.
Yeah.
Plus just general oversight of just strange things. And after the brother is there for a little bit, he realizes, you know what? I don't like this. This isn't what I think. We're not working at our full capacity. And in a meeting, he finds out that there's a leak and that, you know, some of their toy designs are getting leaked out there. So it puts Simpson on this mission. And he calls in his son, LL Cool J, who is a spy.
Yeah. Reconnaissance specialist,
soldier,
basically.
Yeah, soldier. Yeah. And some of the best comedic reliefs are LL Cool J, which is a surprise. Words I never thought I'd say. So he comes in and helps his father basically militarize this toy factory and try to, you know, make sure no information is getting in or out that shouldn't be there. So all these soldiers are in, all these cameras are installed, and it quickly changes the whole culture of this toy factory. People are feel contained. People, you know, are starting to quit because it's just, it's now a military occupancy in a toy factory. And after a little bit of time, he realizes, the general, hey, what's the military missing? It's the budget. Well, he's very scorned that Vietnam didn't go the way he thought it should, and they pulled out. He's like, what if we can militarize toys, like ships and submarines and planes?
Militarizing children.
Yes. And, you know, because he was at an arcade with LL Cool J, his son. He's like, we can manufacture a whole military fleet of toys, put real weaponry on there for a fraction of the cost of the military budget. So in this toy factory, they slowly start to take different wings here, until they've basically taken up 90% of the factory.
Yeah.
And Robin Williams' character is Leslie. His sister her name's not Joan, is it? In the film? It's not. It's like Alessia. Can't remember how you pronounce it. But Joan Cusack's character. It's not pronounced how it looks like it's spelled. I can't remember what it was.
Alastacia. We'll say that.
I think that's right. So Alastacia keeps telling Leslie, hey, you're going to have to man up and stand up to Leland. But he doesn't for the first few times. And finally, when his love interest, who is a young Robin Wright, which if you watch House of Cards, it's Frank Underwood's wife, Claire. Mm-hmm. She's kind of a baddie.
Yeah.
A little bit. I was kind of surprised. You get a young Robin Wright who is... his love interest, and finally some things come together there, and he stands up to him. And they, him and Joan, Robin Williams and Joan Cusack, come up with this big plan to sneak into the restricted zone to see what they're working on, because no one knows. They've just taken up all the space, and there's like a skeleton crew working there anymore. So the music video they made, also a banger.
Absolute banger.
Banger.
Yeah.
Added it to my Spotify today.
Yeah.
It's great. Good. Yeah, those two songs are great, which you said you didn't love the sound. Well, we'll get there.
There's certain aspects of the soundtrack that do not land with me.
Yeah, we'll get there. We'll get there. So when he gets there, what Robin Williams finds is there's all these kids that are there, and they're playing video games, and they're war video games. Like, they're blowing things up, killing people, killing ships, killing planes. As he keeps wandering around, he falls into this big pit of water, and there's this creature in there. And LL Cool J is like, stay still, don't move. It's attracted to movement.
Yeah.
Because he's actually trying to save him, even though he's Leland's son. He doesn't wish any ill will towards him. Now, Leland, on the other hand, is like full dictator mode, ready to not let anything stand in between his way and his toy line getting, or his militarized toy line coming out. He ends up escaping, and the coup begins.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did we see what the sea creature was, the sea swine?
You don't actually see what it is. Yeah, it is a tactical swine, I thought.
Well, it's a tactical sea swine.
Yeah.
Which is a pig.
Yeah.
But you never actually saw it, right?
No. We see, like, at some point, the top of its head kind of pop up and, like...
I thought it was a catfish.
Guns kind of shoot out. I mean, it could have been kind of like catfish. Maybe.
But anyway, sorry, off the point. I was just wondering if you ever... I was like, maybe I missed it, but I didn't get a good look at this sea swan, really.
Yeah.
But anyway, so him and his sister and Robin Wright's character, I can't remember what her name was off the top of my head, come up with this idea to raid the factory after hours and sneak in and, you know, figure it out. But what really helps him is Patrick, his son, Leland's son, the reconnaissance specialist, finds out that Leland had his mother killed in Vietnam. So he decides he's going to help Leslie and Alastacia break in and help it out. Gwen is her name. Robin Wright's character is Gwen.
Yeah.
Break in. So when they break into there, they infiltrate the factory and they basically turn their other non-weaponized toys against the militarized toys.
Yep.
And it starts basically imploding the factory because the militarized toys start destroying everything, destroying each other. And it's at that point that Leland's, one of his helicopters destroys like the whole control panel and just like shuts everything down. Kind of nice, neat, and putting a bow. But the problem is the sea swine comes back in and attacks Alastacia. And then the biggest plot twist in the movie, it turns out that Robin Williams' sister is a robot that was built by her father. So that was me watching it too. I had my suspicions a couple times just by some of her mannerisms and how kind of
extra quirky
she was. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if she's a robot or something.
Yeah,
but it came so late I kind of forgotten that I'd had that thought. But anyway, Leslie's able to take back over the factory as Leland is hospitalized and all the action. He continues his relationship with Robin Wright's character Gwen, and Alastacia is fully repaired and brought back to full android life. That's really about it. Patrick goes back to
reconnaissance
stuff, even though they wanted him to stay. So that's the film in a very brief synopsis nutshell. So what worked for you? What didn't work for you in this film? Because you seem to... I gave this film 4 stars. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
You seem to not as much love it.
Yeah. It's not that I didn't enjoy the movie. I think there are points that it felt too childish.
Mm-hmm.
And shoot, I don't know. It felt, well, I said like when this movie starts out and you kind of get a feeling that maybe this is a Christmas movie, your mind can go to the idea of like, oh, this is going to be an idea of like saving Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Like what if the Leland character comes in and is like, instead of all these kids getting all these magical toys that they love and cultivates imagination, all this stuff, instead we're going to give them all these tools that, you know, train them to be military, you know, tools in the future. And it's all about saving that. I don't know. I feel like that works in a bigger picture type of thing. Storyline, it feels much more singular. And this movie felt kind of disconnected. I feel like to the point where Leland kind of decides that he's going to work on his own, and it kind of becomes a slow takeover of the warehouse. The movie just felt kind of lost to me at that point. And whenever we get to the big battle sequence towards the end, I was completely checked out by then. Like, I had zero interest. I'll be honest, like, we got a recliner for the baby room that came in, and I was actually putting it together while that was happening, and I just kind of knew, like, I didn't have to watch this, and it was, you know, it was that type of thing of, like, it just didn't hold my attention. I checked out. That's not because the effects weren't any good or whatever, because there was a lot of good practical effects.
Especially for being 92, yeah.
Yeah, there's really good practical effects. I just wasn't invested in the story at that point. Because, again, like, whenever they're fighting one another, like, what are they trying to prove? Because at this point, Leland's whole plan had been foiled because the army wouldn't back it.
Yeah.
So...
yeah, there's a couple small things like that that just by not saying a couple of things,
yeah,
would have kept stakes there that could have been there, but
yeah,
they didn't. But, you know, for me, I told you this film today earlier felt like Chris Columbus and Terry Gilliam kind of had it birth the baby a little bit. That.
Yeah.
And that's like speaks to me. It had like the nostalgia of a Chris Columbus film and the kind of absurdity of a Terry Gilliam film, that escapism kind of thing.
Yeah.
Without capitalizing on both of what makes them so great. I still gave this film 4 stars with a lean to 3.5 stars. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
This film was nominated for 2 Oscars, which was a surprise to me, but not really. It was nominated for Best Costume Design and Art Direction. Didn't win either, but was nominated for them.
Mm-hmm.
Performance wise though, I really, really like Joan Cusack. She's just weird. And I love her.
Love it.
Love her for it. And I love her performance even more knowing that she was an android the whole time. It just makes that much more sense. And LL Cool J was great for comic relief. Surprisingly, I really liked him.
I was skeptical about LL Cool J in the beginning, but yeah, it worked for me by the end.
Yeah, same. And then Leland's character was fine. He was a very palatable villain, but
I thought it was funny because it was kind of like satire-like of him explaining the dialect coach, or like whatever, him having a British accent
but being
a middle. I thought it was smart to kind
of
do that.
I did too, because a lot of them don't bother with it.
Yeah, and it helped me buy in a little in the beginning, but I think a lot of stuff just wasn't fleshed out enough for me after that. So I just kind of fell out of interest for me.
What did you think of Robin Williams in this film?
I actually loved his performance. It was trying to think of any movie that we've watched so far that was pretty comparable to it.
Pull up my list.
Yeah. It didn't feel forced. It wasn't one of those characters where he was overly childlike. I thought it was genuine.
Honestly, Hook.
I didn't get Hook vibes on it.
I got Hook vibes from Moscow and the Hudson.
No.
Then this.
Yeah. And then it's probably
Death to Smoochie. Rainbow Randolph.
Maybe.
Baby.
I thought it was a good performance. It was very lighthearted. Nothing super heavy. Mm-mm. I never thought he took anything overly personal, which I feel like in this story, whether it might have helped it or not, I don't know. But yeah, for his performance alone, I thought it was played perfect.
Yeah, no, I really liked him too. The only thing, it felt like he was kind of very passive.
Yeah,
more than and it was part of his character, but almost annoyingly passive in this film. Maybe that was the point. Despite everything going on, his character rubbed me a little bit the wrong way a couple of times in that regard. But as a whole, I thought this film was super creative. All the props and the practical effects and the sets that they built were just amazing. Like we keep saying, like, this film would have worked so much better as a Christmas film. Like, if this was like a North Pole kind of thing.
Yeah.
Would have been a perfect fit.
Kind of race to Christmas Eve type of thing.
Yeah. And Leland coming in it would have been basically Fred Claus.
Well, yeah. I mean, basically the dad dies shortly after Christmas. And then it's like the year leading up to Christmas, this race to, you know, making all these toys.
Something new. And that's like Leland does. And he's basically created VR.
It sounds so bad.
While I'm chewing my berries.
Yes.
But yeah, Leland basically creates VR.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, whenever you think about, no, Leslie creates VR.
Who did I say? Leland?
Yeah, yeah,
Leslie. I meant
yeah.
Robin Williams.
Leslie is creating VR, which is inventive or whatever. And then, yeah, it's just, I don't know. It's a good movie. I never have to see it again, though.
See, I could watch this again and be happy. Yeah, I really like Toys. It's a very simple film.
Yeah, agreed.
Like, there's no layers to it. It's very cut and dry, and that's not a bad thing. I think some films get too caught up in having twists and turns, but like the Joan thing, or Alsatia thing, mm-hmm. huge twist. And I didn't see it coming. Thought it could happen, but didn't see it coming. And that was the right amount of stuff for this film. This film isn't a layered, complex kind of film. It's,
I feel like it wanted to with Leland's character.
Yeah.
Like, what is wanting to say about, you know, the
well, because you made a good point about Barry Levinson to say before.
Off well, yeah, pod. Barry Levinson, he also directed Good Morning Vietnam. And it was pretty obvious that with the Leland character, he had a lot of stuff left over that he wanted to say about the war of Vietnam that he didn't say or left unsaid in Good Morning Vietnam.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it wasn't necessary, because I think it was a good motivator for his actions, like what motivated him to do what he did. Yeah, it was just one of those little, interesting facts.
So for me, if you were recommending one reason for somebody to watch this, what's the one reason for somebody to watch this?
One reason for you to watch this, I think the concept alone is interesting. I think if you're someone that doesn't get hung up on practical effects or visual effects and like you appreciate creativity, I think this movie does have it. And yeah, I think that would probably be the main thing. And there's probably plenty of other things I can mention, but yeah, that's the one thing.
So yeah, my biggest thing is the whole visual aesthetic of this film. It's very escapist. It's huge. It's so exaggerated in a childish way.
Yeah.
And pointfully so, it's a toy movie based on toy making. And
yeah,
the whole, I just miss that time of big, practical, elaborate sets. Like, I think of The Adventures mm-hmm. of Baron Munchausen and how that whole film is just so practical. This kind of gave me that kind of similar eerie vibe a little bit. Not eerie, same escape, whimsical vibe. I loved the set design. I love the costume design. I love the art direction. It's just, the movie could have had no dialogue and just walking around it, and I would have loved it.
Yeah.
Kind of, actually, it felt, I keep saying Santa, it felt like Willy Wonka in the Chocolate Factory if he had a toy.
So, Robert Ebert's, no, I think it was a critic for the Washington Post had said that this was, it wasn't not a good review, but it was basically Dr. Strangelove meets Willy Wonka.
Oh, yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
See, and that's, to me, that's a good plug.
Yeah.
That's like my kind of thing right there. So, and you know, so to me, you come here for that and then you stay for just a decent Robin Williams performance. So, and this is very 1992. Just, you know, pretty straightforward, but I had a really good time with Toys. I really enjoyed it. It's another really fun Robin Williams outing, and it continues to be. I just really enjoyed Robin Williams in review. Like, he's been,
It's been good,
very diverse in a lot of ways. So, I'm glad to have added this one to my Robin Williams in review. So, you have any other closing thoughts on Death to Smoochie?
No, you mean Toys before we go.
Toys before we go into Death to Smoochie. Yeah, I think I did even close.
I got thoughts on Death to Smoochie.
So you break me down on Death to Smoochie.
Well, I got to pull it up first, man. You can't just drop it on.
Now tell me though, you always say there's a correlation.
Yeah,
these two relate.
They do. I mean, in the context of Robin Williams's character, mm-hmm. you know, you have what appears to be a very lighthearted and easygoing, whimsical character that has this bright imagination and great outlook on life. That's what you think that you get in Death to Smoochie whenever we open up.
Yeah.
But that is very quickly revealed to be not the case. So Death to Smoochie is a 2002 movie directed by Danny DeVito, like we said earlier. Let me give you the plot. Get ready for an unexpected hit. Tells the story of Rainbow Randolph, the corrupt costume star of a popular children's TV show, who is fired over a bribery scandal and replaced by squeaky clean Smoochie, a puffy fuchsia rhinoceros. Fuchsia is such a hard word, man.
Fuchsia?
Yeah. Always gets me. As Smoochie catapults to fame, scoring hit ratings and the affections of a network executive, Randolph makes the unsuspected rhino the target of his numerous outrageous attempts to exact revenge and reclaim his status as American sweetheart. So yeah, something that this does not explain is the role that later on Danny DeVito's character, Burke Bennett, plays. So basically the movie plays out exactly how we read. Robin Williams' character is caught in the scandal. You find out very quickly that he's a very cynical man who thinks, you know, he's very very selfish and just the worst type of human, and is kicked out of the job in the
Rainbow fucking Randolph.
Yeah. And it is it's the type of spectacle like that a network gives whenever a person's caught in a scandal that we just simply don't see today.
Yeah.
Everything's blown way more out of proportion now, whether it's justified or not.
Yeah.
And which causes this search for the new network darling for this time slot that is for KidsNet. The search is headed by Marion Frank Stokes, who's played by Jon Stewart.
What a wig.
Absolutely atrocious hairpiece.
Yeah, so bad.
I would have loved to see more Jon Stewart in this movie, honestly.
He was actually good when he was in there.
Yeah, and Catherine Keener.
Who was actually pretty good, too. I actually kind of liked her character.
I gotta be honest. Catherine Keener is attractive, right? Why are we chuckling?
I knew you were going to say this. I just knew Kathleen Keener is like your kind of thing.
I mean, it's Catherine. But yeah, Catherine. Catherine Ann Keener.
I've always said Kathleen Keener.
No.
Yeah, I do not find her that attractive. No.
Okay. Point being, Catherine Keener plays Nora Wells, who is later the love interest of Edward Norton.
Which, funny, Nora Wells is also the name of the love interest of Will Ferrell's dad's dead wife in Elf.
Huh, interesting. Edward Norton's Sheldon Mopes also played Smoochie. Smoochie, though, is who they land on. He basically is this...
Which I wouldn't expect. I always forget how bad his costume is when they find him at the Methadone Clinic.
Yeah. It looks like it was put together at a Hobby Lobby. Or somehow also used as, like, I don't know, some arena football league.
Yeah.
Some weird costume. But anyways... Smoochie is this person who you described him as very crunchy.
Yes.
He is.
Or autistic.
Yeah. Not autistic. I think he is just a very well-mannered person who thinks the best in people and wants the best for others and wants to spread the love I was going to say good news, but friendship. He's definitely not sharing the gospel.
No.
He
although he does like Jesus.
He does.
He talks about Jesus. Yeah, Jesus who was it? Big Bird or something?
I don't remember. Like I said, I checked in and out of this. Who are you calling?
I was calling quite a few people. I want them to Google Catherine Keener.
It's not necessary for this podcast. Smoochie lands the role.
Mm-hmm.
Listen, I'm not explaining this whole movie, so you can just go on call people.
I'm done.
Off my groove.
I already called. You're okay. Good. Go ahead. All right.
So Smoochie lands the job.
Yes.
He's a huge success.
He landed the job while he was eating soy hot dogs with some sort of almond paste.
Yeah, that's not important, though, to the story, because he lands the job. It's a huge success. He gets a huge costume upgrade and enters... enters Dane DeVito's character, Burke Bennett. Burke Bennett tracks him down, basically says, hey, listen, I know what's ahead of you. You're gonna need some representation. You want to make sure you have somebody that's looking out for you. And Sheldon being the wide-eyed, you know, innocent guy that he is, says sure. But we know very quickly that Burke is out for himself.
Yeah. Although he does have moments where it kind of seems like he's not.
Meanwhile, Randolph's in the dumps. He's not feeling great about himself. He's very upset and has seen that that Smoochie has taken over. He's already been replaced and is a huge success, and he is going to plot to destroy him so he can get his time slot back, which leads to all kinds of antics. You mentioned the dick cookies. That were
one-eyed wonder weasel. I wish
I mean, obviously cock, penis, not, wiener, but he had some, he had good some lines. Good ones. That, yeah. That whole rant is 10 out of 10.
Yeah. That was the first moment, that you see Robin Williams kind of completely unhinged, really for any of the movies that we watched. I feel like, I think in other movies he will have expoundatory moments, but not in a complete, like, just, I mean, just terrible human being.
Yeah, it was, level. It was great. I love it seeing great. It.
So basically, Randolph just goes out. He's out to get Smoochie. Smoochie's befriended by some Irish mob.
Tommy.
Families, yeah. Most notably Spinner.
Spinner's mama!
Yeah, famously opened us up on the pod. Played by Michael Rispoli. Yeah, he is just a great character, absolutely needed. I mean, completely moves the story along, sure. As the story moves along, Randolph is more and more motivated to ruin Sheldon's career. To the point where he has roped him in to doing an event. He doesn't know that Randolph is called him to do this.
Because he's in a disguise. Yeah, he's in using disguise. An Irish accent or Scottish.
But ropes him into doing an event for an Irish, or not Irish.
It's a children's event.
He thinks it's a children's event.
Gala when he's being presented. Like after he does a song, he's don't like this girl. And the handicapped girl with mild asthma.
Kind of like a make-a-wish type of thing. But yeah, it turns out it's a Nazi gathering. And, you know, immediately after it's revealed, the FBI raids, the whole thing, obviously tipped off by Randolph. And, you know, at this point, Sheldon has been, he's not been exposed because he didn't do it, but
yeah,
you know, the media knows that he attended this event, and
there's pictures of him right from a giant swastika with all these people terrible. Saying Heil Smoochie.
Yeah. And so now Sheldon is out on his luck. Can't do anything, to fix it because there's no proof. While Randolph is trying to get his job back, he approaches, Catherine Keener, his character Nora. And in trying to persuade her to give him his job back, lets slip some detail that basically reveals that he was the one that set him up. With this info, Nora basically convinces the studio to bring back.
She tells Tommy.
Oh yeah,
tells the Irish mob boss because Spinner had got to go on the show a couple times with Smoochie.
Yeah.
So Spinner loves Smoochie.
Played the cowbell.
Yeah, the cowbell. Yeah. So because of this, Tommy feels a endearment to Smoochie. So when Kathleen Keener's character, Nora, tells her that this has happened, they go visit old Rainbow Randolph.
Get a confession
out of him. And he admits to it. And then, you know, Smoochie's not canceled anymore, gets to go back on air, and Rainbow Randolph is disgraced and having like a psychotic break. So there you go. There's that.
I feel like we're missing the storyline though. When is it really introduced the head guy's job?
The guy who talks like this the whole time.
Yeah, what was his motivation?
He is the head of March for Hope, I think, or something like
charity.
That.
Charity.
Yeah,
okay.
And it's like one of the biggest charities in town.
Why?
Or nationwide. And what they had previously done with the network is they'd have all these philanthropic events or whatever. And a portion, most of it would go to whatever charity or whatever it was. But then you would also have, they would take a chunk off the top and spread it amongst like John Stewart's character, Danny DeVito's character, and obviously the guy who talked like this, whatever his name was.
Sheldon is not gonna
do that. He don't want to do the events anyway like that.
Yeah,
like his idea of an event, like he told Danny DeVito, is to have this ice skating event that they wanted to do, but all the proceeds, half of them go to rebuilding the methadone clinic, half of them go to something else.
So basically he was approached to do that job originally, and he wouldn't do it because of those reasons.
Yeah,
because
he wasn't going to get, even with the threat of his life, he didn't want to do that kind of stuff.
So So it's once he's come back, that dude that you mentioned is basically out to kill Smoochie. And in an attempt to do that, they who they send to kill him, they find the wrong guy. Yep. It's the same day that Spinner had been revealed as Smoochie's cousin.
Talking about Ding Dong, the guy they hired to go kill Smoochie.
No, not the last time. I'm talking about the first time where they accidentally kill
the Spinner.
Moochie.
Oh yeah, I was thinking of the ice skater.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. 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 Yeah.
They kill Moochie, not realizing it's not Smoochie.
Yeah, because he was so annoying with the cowbell. They said, please give him something else besides playing the cowbell. So have him be his cousin.
Yeah.
Moochie the rhinoceros.
That's where we get the great my nuts are. Give it to us.
Mooch, my nuts it's real bad in this costume.
You lost it.
Yeah.
You lost it.
Hey, my nuts it's real bad in this costume, Moochie. There we go.
It was a little pretty better. Loud, yeah.
See, I just can't do it quietly. You just can't do it.
That's why we're upstairs.
That's pretty close. It's what he does across the Italian restaurant.
He does, yeah, he does. So RIP Mooch, Spinner is dead.
Which Tommy done a
Tommy's are upset. They're out for blood, but it's really affected Sheldon. He's come up with this idea that to honor his death, he wants to do this ice show. Mm-hmm. And he told Burke, but in doing so, he wanted it to go to the methadone clinic, to the whatever
the other one was.
I think it was some hot dog stand type of thing.
Yeah.
But everything was for free. All this other stuff, where the money was going to go. Nobody was going to make any profit off that. This was kind of the nail in the coffin for Burke and I forget the guy's name again. Marion. Nope. That was John Stewart's character. But anyways, it was the last nail in the coffin for Burke and he's ready to kill him. So they rope in another, former kidnet guy who
Buggy Ding Dong.
Yeah, they promised that he would be, but you find out he's on the
mafia side.
No, he's not.
Kinda. He'd do anything to get in their graces to get a show back. I call that the mafia side.
Sure. I was gonna say he was on heroin.
No, yeah, he was an addict. Yeah, for sure.
And so the ice show happens. Before this, Randolph has his last moment whenever he finds out that Nora and Sheldon were basically
banging.
Hey! In a fit of rage, Randolph goes to confront them, and this is where it kind of lost me.
Okay.
In basically the confrontation, they wrestle a gun away from Randolph, and Randolph basically like, you know, just kill me. I have nothing else to live for. And
he's already tried to kill himself once.
Yeah. And he did. Yeah. I forgot about that. There's so much. There's too much that happens in this movie.
No, it's not enough.
So, you know, Sheldon basically is like, you don't have to do that. You can always have a friend or whatever. And I guess Randolph asks him to be his friend. And just like that, you know,
he melted his heart.
Yeah. The grudge is forgiven. And basically Randolph has become Smoochie's number one fan at this point quickly.
Well, because he's given him, it's kind of like Peter denying Christ three times.
It's a second chance at life type of thing. Yeah,
because he did the one-eyed Wonder Weasel wiener cookies to try to get him canceled on air.
This is also a stretch.
This
is a stretch of a comparison.
Well, then he did the Nazi party.
Mm-hmm.
And then he did the attempted murder.
Yeah, sure.
And then
three times.
He denied
the fire too.
Well, that was adjacent. That was, yeah. You know, oh yeah. Wait. That's fine. Yeah. Okay. I see what you're saying.
Okay.
Yeah. but yeah. And then he ended up just being like, I still love you. You're accepted.
So, the bridge has been mended, between
Tommy intervenes, by the way, when Randolph couldn't do it. Tommy Spinner's mama, she intervenes and off cam kills the bad guys.
I was getting there, but yeah.
So, oh yeah. Sorry.
Well, they go to the ice show and they find out that someone's out to kill him. And, Randolph bolts his way over there, even though that they know to be on the lookout for him, mm-hmm. because as far as I know, he still has a grudge. And Randolph jumps in to stop Bugsy, Buggy, and Buggy falls to his death from the rafters of this ice skating rink, mm-hmm. and dies. Meanwhile, Tommy's crew comes in and snags up Randolph and takes Burke and Marion, or not Marion, forget their name, but yeah, all's done. They're all dead. All the bad guys are dead. And Smoochie and
Stokes, John Stewart's character.
Oh, Stokes.
DeVito and Stewart. Yeah.
Okay. No, I was saying Marion Stokes is the character's name, but I was trying to figure out the executive.
Mary and Stokes. I was like,
no.
I don't remember Mary, but.
No. So after everything's gone back to normal, Smoochie and Randolph join forces to have their own TV show.
Where they just Eiffel Tower Nora the whole time.
Yeah.
It's a rainbow.
Yeah.
When he said, it doesn't bother you that I'm a pillow biter.
I don't know, but it's a chore to explain movies.
You did a great job.
I don't feel like it.
You did a really good job.
My throat's all sore. I need to chug this water.
I'm sucking on these Sour Patch Kids.
Yeah, it's great. Everyone's loving that sound effect.
don't make me do another spinner, no,
please don't.
Listen, Tanner and Gary, I have no idea what to do when I go, hey, tomorrow on the podcast. It's going to be great. I'm going to talk like Spinner a bunch. I'm mostly focused.
That's not going to be good. With no context, that's not good. It's okay this time because we have context.
I'll eventually give context. Tanner, all right, stop recording right now. Cut it out. Well, I can't do it super loud because Val will be asleep. Mm-hmm. So I could do that. I'll be all right. All right. So what worked for you about, because you gave this 3 stars as well. I gave this 4 stars. What worked for you about this film?
I think the first 40 minutes of this really worked for me. Mm-hmm. It was very simple. It was a cat and mouse type of thing where Smoochie's just innocently living his life and Randolph's kind of out to get him.
Mm-hmm. Tom and Jerry.
Yeah, Tom and Jerry.
Yeah.
Yeah, it felt very lighthearted.
Mm-hmm.
But as the plot kind of thickened, different storylines are added, different characters, it became kind of jumbled and just kind of did not stick the landing for me.
What did you think of the casting? Because seeing Edward Norton and Danny DeVito and Robin Williams all in the same film is kind of like, whoa.
Edward Norton is a choice. I probably get why you do it. I mean, this is, this is 2001, couple years after Fight Club. I get why you cast him, probably.
American History X came out sometime not too around this time, too.
Yeah, which is kind of ironic.
Yep, because of the Nazi thing. I thought about it today. I was like, man.
Yes, let's get something straight. 2024 Smoochie would not be coming back from that Hitler thing.
No.
It doesn't matter what. You're not coming back from it.
Unless you got tism.
Because I'm to blame. I think otherwise. See, that's not even fair. Why would you do that?
What?
Text you just said.
So earlier, Jeff, you were talking about what a baddie Catherine Keener was. They'll, so I sent
this podcast. They know what we're talking about.
So I
about.
Sent a picture to the most focused group message.
And I didn't say she was a baddie.
You said
I was
she's
like, is she attractive in this movie?
You said she's kind of hot. In this movie, that's okay. Same thing. I said hot or not. JP dropped live on pod that she's a hottie to him, and I sent a picture of her. It's fair.
Okay. All right.
Now maybe the picture wasn't the best. It's the first one that came up
in casting in this movie. Catherine Keener is good casting. I think she plays her part probably the best of all the other castings. Robin Williams.
Edward Norton was pretty freaking great.
I don't know. There was something about it. It was something about it that felt. What's the movie that he's in where he is the murder suspect.
Insomnia?
No, not Insomnia. I'm talking about Edward Norton.
Oh, I thought about Robin Williams. He's the murder suspect?
Yeah, it's got that plot twist. You know what I'm talking about?
No.
Hold on.
But yes, sounds very familiar.
Shoot. Primal Fear.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
I don't know. Whole time he's talking, it's like, that's who I'm hearing. And I kind of expect him at some point in the movie to have like this. And he almost does towards the end of it.
Yeah.
At the end where he snaps and I don't know. Him being so wholesome the entire time, I just wasn't always into it.
Have you seen this, by the way?
Especially, yeah, it seems really cheesy.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Not really interested in that. We're talking about the
David James Corn
Gunn. Yeah, yeah, James Gunn dropped an image. Yeah, it's going to be really weird to see a kind of goofy Superman.
Yeah, I'm not sure about
it. Not that Superman has to be serious, but
yeah, I know.
James Gunn.
So, you know, I liked Edward Norton. So I was just talking about what worked for me. I loved Edward Norton in this role. It's kind of like counter Edward Norton, although Edward Norton does some zany, weird, quirky stuff in films if you look through his filmography. But yeah. I really liked his performance here. I thought it was fun coming off.
Mm-hmm.
Films like Fight Club coming off around the same time of American History X. This just feels like a nice break
yeah.
from what he was doing. I thought him and Robin Williams paired well together.
We needed more of them.
Yeah, I agree. I would have loved to have had yeah. more of the hijinks, more like when they were beefing and then more of a team up at the end. Then it would have been even more fun. Death to Smoochie feels like it would have been a great HBO limited series.
I could see that. I still see a slimmed down version of this movie
yeah.
and it being just as effective,
yeah.
if not
either
more.
Either way, it would be fine. But I this world is something I enjoyed
yeah.
a lot of. The whole like Sesame Street ripoff kind of stuff was great.
You say HBO, I see Adult Swim. You throw this on Adult Swim.
What was that show with Rob Corddry with the clown? The sad Dr. Clown. Oh.
I want to say Baskets, but that was Zach Galifianakis. I know what you're talking about, though. I can't remember.
Yeah. Anyway. But no, what worked for me, Edward Norton, A. B, just the whole premise. Like this whole...
Yeah, it felt kind of similar to Kings of Comedy, or mm-hmm. King of Comedy.
Which I haven't seen.
It's a
classic I need to watch. Dawson's yeah. a fierce defender, loves that film to death. Not that it needs defending.
No, it is a very... landmark type movie. I think it's really effective. But this felt kind of similar as far as like drawing inspiration from.
Yeah.
So that would be probably the only comp I really have of it.
Yeah. But yeah, no, I loved it, man. It was it's kind of weird. It's also kind of funny. It's also kind of dark. It's just visually kind of like a fever dream, not like Paprika, different kind of fever dreams. Like it's kind of one of those movies I'll look back in when I'm starting to lose my mind and I'm like in my 70s, like, how does a pink rhinoceros smoochie? Why do I know that? Why is that in my head?
Yeah.
This is the kind of movie that just kind of ingrains itself into your head that mm-hmm. you'll remember forever. Don't ask me the science behind that. I'm just telling you it's a fact. So yeah, I really like Death to Smoochie, and I love the correlation between Rainbow Randolph and Leslie from Toys. To me, this whole time I just kept thinking that Toys is Leslie after the thing went bankrupt, so he did a child show and then lost it all and
yeah. became
a crazy demented person. So no, I really love Death to Smoochie. I love Toys. I gave them both 4 stars, both really well, different kind of films, but really well done, well acted, and just enough weird to scratch that weird itch for me. So where do they rank for you?
Oh man,
see, I'm ready. I have a living, breathing list. I've even added
my tags.
Next week's movies, Jack, Cadillac Man, and Being Human. And the week after that, well, because I'll be in Disney 2 weeks after that, Boulevard, Good Will Hunting, and Mrs. Doubtfire.
Yeah.
So for me, I'll read my ranking. I have nothing's over 4 stars. So 4 stars is where I've capped out. The World According to Garp is my favorite Robin Williams film so far at 4 stars, followed by What Dreams May Come. At 4 stars, followed by Death to Smoochie at 4 stars, followed by Hook at 4 stars, followed by Toys at 4 stars, followed by Awakenings at 4 stars, followed by Bicentennial Man at 4 stars, which
I know you're way different there. Then I dropped down to my 3.5s, which is Good Morning Vietnam, Moscow on the Hudson, 1 hour photo, and Insomnia. Then you jumped into World's Greatest Dad at 3 stars, The Birdcage at 3 stars, and then lastly, The Night Listener at 2.5 stars. So that's where I'm, that's where my rankings sit.
I mirror you, where the World According to Garp has been my favorite Robin Williams movie so far. That's at 4 stars. My 3.5s, though, I got a few of them, but we'll go in. Probably is going to be What Dreams May Come. With,
so our number 1 and 2 are the same.
Okay. And then Good Morning Vietnam, Awakenings, World's Greatest Dad, The Birdcage. Onto my 3 stars. I've got, shoot. See, this is where it gets a little dicey. Probably Moscow on the Hudson, followed by Hook, Death to Smoochie, 1 hour. Do you have Insomnia rated higher than 1 hour photo?
They're same rating, but I have 1 hour photo right the one in front of.
I think I'd go 1 hour photo over Insomnia, just because how that movie ends. I think it's a little bit more compelling. And then, that's my three. That's my 3 star movies. And then I got Bicentennial Man at 2.5 with A Night Listener at 1.5.
What about Toys? You didn't say Toys.
Oh, Toys is 3 star. It's probably going to be
the lead in before your 2.5.
Somewhere in between. I'd probably put Toys above The Thrillers there. 1 hour photo, Insomnia.
Yeah, I think so too. So what were your last two ratings though? The Night Listener and what was the one
before? Bicentennial Man was 2.5 and The Night Listener is 1.5.
The Bicentennial Man rating is so crazy to me.
It's way too long. It's very thin plot storyline for all that mess.
Well, so next week we have two comedies. Yeah. Originally it was just going to be Jack and Cadillac Man, but after some discussions, I realized that I missed two big Robin Williams underseen films.
What were those?
So next week we're going to do Jack Cadillac Man and Being Human. Being Human is a 1994 film directed by Bill Forsythe, who directed a bunch of films I also have not seen, but, for Hector, history has a way of repeating itself. One man must learn the meaning of courage across 4 lifetime centuries apart.
Okay.
And I'm telling you, this cast just is exciting to me. I mean, Robert Carlyle, I said it earlier, Robert Carlyle, John Turturro, Bill Nighy, Ewan McGregor, Vincent D'Onofrio. I mean, it's just a great time. And William H. Macy, I'm here for this.
Yeah.
It's long, though.
How long?
122 minutes.
Oh, that's not that long.
No. But that's 1994. Then we have Jack, 1996, Francis Ford Coppola film, and Cadillac Man, 1990. So those are our films next week. Then the week after that, to close it out, we have Boulevard, the 2014 film, which is a serious edition, 88 minutes. Check the synopsis on this. I think you're going to like this.
Which one?
Boulevard. It's never too late to make a U-turn. Nolan Mack, a soft-spoken bank employee, undoubtedly loves his wife, Joy. Though their carnivorous empty house only underscores how disconnected they've always been from each other. Nolan finds himself drifting away from his familiar present-day life in pursuit of lost time after meeting a troubled young man named Leo on his drive home. What begins as an aimless drive down an unfamiliar street turns into a life-altering series of events. Hmm. Yeah. So that has a 3.0, and then the other new one we added was Being Human, that they both have 3.0s. So then we'll end with Good Will Hunting and Mrs. Doubtfire after Boulevard. So 2 weeks left, and that'll give us a total of a nice rounded out 20 Robin Williams films we watched in review.
Wow.
So I'm excited about that. And I'm also proud to say that we've decided who our next. We're going to do another actor interview.
It was just decided. We're not going to sit on this. We're going to let it stew. We're not going to hint it, tease it, do whatever.
No, I think we could just announce it. I'm excited about it. We'll iron out what films.
Yeah.
We'll iron out the films.
No need to go into the movies. We'll just.
Yeah, we're going to do Ryan Gosling in review.
Yeah.
Next. So his features, not like his supportings, unless it's like a, you could argue that Robin Williams was definitely the support. He was a supporting character in Smoochie, but he's also in it quite a bit.
Yeah.
So the only film we've watched with Robin Williams that he wasn't really in much was Insomnia. He was a present and a looming threat, but he wasn't actually in it that much. But yeah, I really enjoyed this Robin Williams interview, and I've enjoyed the actor interview as a whole because it's different directors, different styles. It's, you know, kind of a different experience each time. So yeah. I'm excited to get a couple comedies in this week too. We haven't done a lot of Robin Williams true comedies, and Jack and Cadillac Man are both comedies at their core. So
mm-hmm.
I'm excited for this. So you have any closing thoughts?
None.
No, how did we do on this one?
Good time wise. So
nice. Look at us.
So about nice.
That's two in a row.
That should be the goal.
Yeah, well, sometimes I watch a lot of movies.
Sometimes, yeah, we do three in review.
That will be
all right. Not be the case next week. So get buckle up, guys.
Nah, maybe we'll all hate all three films and there's not much to talk about.
That's not entertaining podcasting, though.
What was that one? Oh, The Shining. It's like your least favorite episode we ever discussed. That's the one where I woke up and said, what about Jim Caviezel?
Or, yeah, to be fair, I think you were feeling well or whatever. I think you almost fell asleep.
No, I did fall asleep. And that never happens. So yeah. I must have been getting sick or something.
It was, yeah, late.
Yeah, well, it's not any later than normal. I just couldn't, something about that. I don't know. I'd never fallen asleep on this show before, but I think it's because I was sitting on that side.
I don't remember. Yeah.
Yeah, well, no, I remember I was on that side. But anyway. All right, well, this has been another episode of Mostly Film, your one-stop chaotic shop for all things in the world of cinema. For all you people out there that listen to us, like, subscribe in there. I got a couple people message me from Arizona. That was kind of cool out of nowhere. Said they've been binge listening through our podcast. And
we'll have Mostly Focus dropping tomorrow. That's what I'll say tomorrow.
Well, recording tomorrow.
No, it'll be dropping because it's a Thursday episode. It would be dropping tomorrow to Thursday's the episode on a Friday.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Yeah, so Mostly Focus, we're recording two new episodes tomorrow. Assuming the tornadoes don't come early or anything, but hopefully not, they'll be here. We will be taking it. We'll record next week with Dawson. He'll be on here to discuss Jack, Cadillac Man, and Being Human, and of course whatever other episodes or things we discuss in the Tuesday first part of the episode. Then we'll be taking a week break because I'll be in Disney World for a week. We'll be back the next week to talk about Good Will Hunting and Mrs. Doubtfire and Boulevard.
Yeah.
So I hope you guys are enjoying it. We will be back with you soon. And maybe I'll play Lorcana by then. That's my goal. So
yeah, you better. Hopefully we'll play Lorcana
too. I'm ready. I got my box.
I'm not playing tonight.
Oh, no, I know that, but I'm ready.
You gotta have a deck put together. Put a deck together.
The fact that they're itemized and organized is a start, okay? Let me have my moment.
Okay.
All right, see y'all later.
See ya.